Velkommen til Svendevis Hjørne, stedet hvor alt kan ske. Åbenhjertige samtaler, betroelser og røverhistorier.
Can I make it a little bit bigger? Maybe you should do it so I don't put oil on it.
Wait, let me get it for you then, it's a little bigger. There you go. Oh, you could use it.
Yeah. But I thought you said you never do funny cartoons.
Oh.
It's a bit funny. Now it jumped away. And, yeah.
There is it. So it's basically Trump.
Yeah.
And it's being used to take down democracy, basically.
Yeah.
The sand built democracy.
Yeah. But that makes you laugh, this one.
Yeah.
Sadly. But that's rare
for
your stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's not made to be funny, I guess, but...
No, it's... Yeah. Of course, it's based on truth.
Yeah.
And on the situation in the Middle East and in Arab countries. How do you get your ideas?
I read a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, I read a lot.
What do you read?
Articles, a lot of articles. Yeah, a lot of citizen journalists.
Yeah.
And I try to read different point of views. It's very hard, but I try to read it, because when you read if you read a Trump supporter, for example, you're just going to get a heart attack. But, you know, you have to. I guess, just to try to figure out, you know, how they think. But it's very similar, you know, because I went to religious schools,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I went to a Catholic school when I was a kid. And then I went to a Muslim Brothers University, you know? And I studied, like, proper Wahhabism, like, religion classes and everything. And it's very similar. You know, it's very like all these fanatics that use religion. It's a very similar thought of way of, you know, the way of thinking that we're right because we're obviously right, and everybody's wrong because they don't know. You know, and they're
but
all.
But that's a basic fundamental.
Basically, and thinking. You know, it's all the same.
Yeah.
They're basically all the same. So, you know, with me studying a very hardcore kind of, you know, religion, I think it just. I kind of had a look into this other world, you know. So a very like you know, alt-right, like a, I don't know, like a evangelical Zionist will very much agree with an ISIS fighter in a lot of things, you know. They just need to just get over that point that they're talking about two different religions, but they'll definitely be talking about the same thing, you know, the right to own guns, and you know, God is on our side, and la 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 la, and all of that, and. Whose is Jerusalem, and why is that important anyways, and all of that. So it's very similar. So with this, I think it's just, you know, that's basically where I get my inspiration. It's just comparing these two things, and mostly living it. Mostly just being angry, I guess.
Yeah.
Just being really angry. Because it's really, you know, from the discussions that go on my Facebook or go on my social media, you know, people don't believe that I'm not doing this for money.
How come?
Because that doesn't make sense to them. Because you have to be backed by someone. You have to be backed by someone. The idea that I want to be independent and I'm fighting to be independent is just alien to them. Like, why would, like, no way, you know? And because I'm here, you know, all my life, one of the reasons why I wanted to get out of Qatar was because whatever I say, I would be viewed as a mouthpiece for the Qataris, right? So I hated that because I'm not. I could have been, and I could have been very rich doing it, but I'm not, right? And I made this decision to come here because I wanted to be independent, because I wanted to keep my independency, because I wanted to see, you know, how it is to have that peaceful, you know, surroundings.
How would it affect you?
I can do that, yeah, you know. Now that I'm here, people say I'm backed by, like, the West and whatever, you know. So it's like you have to be backed by someone. Like, there's no way you're independent. There's no way, you know. And
is it too idealistic for our world today?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
It's a bit sad.
Yeah, it is. It is sad, really. But I believe it's our fault. I believe that journalists and you know, academics or whatever, they went, you know, it's all about who pays you, you know. Like, a lot of people are angry at Al Jazeera because it supports a certain line, but I don't mind that. Like, if you know, I don't mind people that have a way of thought and they follow it and they believe in it and they fight for it or whatever, if that's right or wrong, fine, but at least you thought about something, right? But for me, it's the people that you pay and they say whatever they want to say. That's, for me, that's not journalism, right? And I've seen that in the region. It's incredible. Like, people don't have a belief. The belief is whatever that keeps me alive and feeding my children. That's my belief, you know. And it's disgusting. And people like that who are the people in power, unfortunately, you know. And they discard all the proper journalistic work that a lot of people are doing. Because people now don't believe in journalism. It's not only this whole fake news that, you know, Trump did. Because before that, it was fake news. And we were listening to fake news about us from CNN and from BBC and from whatever, you know. It was fake news. It wasn't true. Whatever they said, you know, like, they invaded Iraq based on a lie, right? So it was fake, you know. So Trump, he's an idiot, but he used it against them. Because it is true, you know. So it's just that, and people just don't understand the fact of being independent. And I'm really pushing for that. I'm really pushing to be independent, even though it's hard. It really is.
So I guess the greatest weapon for the ones who don't agree with you, and it is that they can box you in by saying that you're paid by somebody.
Yeah.
So by fleeing, you can avoid that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a high price to pay for independence.
Well, life is very, it's very high. It's very, very high, and especially.
How do you feel about being here?
I'm trying to make the best out of it.
You look quite satisfied.
I'm good. Alhamdulillah, yani, I'm trying my best. I really am. I mean, it was tough. It was definitely very tough because it's I had a lot of high hopes, you know. I wanted to do a lot of things, and I still want to do a lot of things, but a lot of...
You have many projects, actually.
I do have many projects, but I always had many projects, and that's what I do, that's, you know, I mean, I guess when you find your purpose, or you think it's your purpose, then you go on with it. And besides that, you know, whether I like it or not, a lot of people believe in me now, you know, back home, and it's not only Sudan, it's like a region, really, you know. And I can back up now.
And you're actually one of the ones who had a reason for saying that, but during the Arab Spring,
yeah,
your voice was very important, had a huge impact.
Well, you know, many voices had.
Yeah.
I think I was part of a wave.
And you were at the right time, at the right place.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't just that moment, because that moment took 3 years of work to get there, you know. I mean, for me, I started doing 2008. By the time the Arab Spring happened, I already knew half the people that were in the streets and whatever, you know, the Yemen or in Egypt or even in Sudan in the protests, and we were already working together. So it wasn't something that just happened overnight, and it was just a surprise, like, you know, like the world says, it wasn't a surprise. It was brewing, you know, and. Like, just like it's brewing now. So it's but now they know. Now they know what to look out for. Right? And all the weapons that we have, people have, you know, the governments or authoritarian regimes have taken notice of, you know. So with very simple solutions sometimes, like, you know, if you look at Iran or if you look at Sudan, for example, what they did was just they made the internet prices go really high and they slow the internet. So nobody can actually afford to be online or to shoot videos or to send videos. Nobody can afford to do that. So now they slowed this whole thing down. Mm. Nobody can do that anymore. Because the first revolutions, if you remember the Green Revolution in Iran or in Sudan, the protests, or in Egypt and all of that, the first thing that happened was they shut down the internet. You know? So they knew that was the weapon, and now they totally control that. Whether it's from, you know, the privacy laws, or whether it's you know, Twitter now has a headquarter in Dubai, which is totally politicized with the Saudis and the Emiratis, and we're siding, of course, with Trump and all of that. So it's just a counter revolution winning. Mm. You know, and they.
But how do you look at that? Because when you started on the net was, so to speak, free, in the sense
sort of
that it was.
Yeah.
And now it had changed.
No, because they just thought of us as kids. They thought we were just watching porn. Mm. You know, but we were doing so much more. You know, because it's a. This is. We got.
So they were taken by surprise.
They were taken by surprise, and you know, on the internet, we it gave us a chance that they never gave us. You know, it gave us a chance to travel, it gave us visas, it gave us a chance to see the world, see the view, the other side, read books that we weren't allowed to read, and
on the net,
yeah. And that gave people here a chance that they never had as well, because there were borders put up. On purpose to keep people apart.
Is that the reason why you never use words in your cartoons?
Yes.
To surpass the borders.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I try to use as less, you know, as words as I can.
But do you use words at all?
Sometimes I do. Yeah.
Well, you had one word. It was one for today.
Yeah, half a word.
Half a word.
So it's I try as much as I can, and I think it's very hard to do, and that's why I don't. I don't think it's, I get very upset when I do easy cartoons, because it's
what's easy cartoons?
Easy cartoons is a joke. It's like you just, you know, you put on a gag and everybody can make anybody laugh. You know, it's not a problem. Like a fart joke or a sex joke or whatever, it's the easiest thing to do. But to explain a complex situation in a way that grabs attention in this age of short attention span. Mm. That's a challenge.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what I take on every day. I mean,
you're good with complexity. For instance, at the invitation event at the Central Library, mm-hmm. There was one from the audience,
yeah.
Who asked you about, what about us the Danes and the problems we have with being insecure when we do the drawings of the prophet drawings? And you made such an excellent remark to that one. Do you remember what you said?
No, really.
You want me to repeat what you said?
Not exactly.
But you said something about that it's not really a matter of painting the prophet or not, because everybody can do that.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of why you do it.
Mm.
And I think you made us think a lot about that event.
Yeah.
It was great.
Good. That's good. That's what I want to do, because it's not. I don't think it's about me making people think. I think it's about thinking together about, you know, what is this. And why? That's a very important question. Why?
Mm.
You know, why is this happening? Why is it at this time? And you know, and that's a question that a lot of people in power obviously don't want you to think.
Mm.
You know, so why should be always the headline? You know, And that's what I try to look at. I mean, it's obviously very hard, and obviously you can, a lot of times you get off point, and a lot of times, but it's about that. It's journalism is about telling what's happening, but it's also about trying to figure out the truth,
mm.
Right? Many truths. So that's what I try to do. I try to figure out why for my own sake. Because as I said, I'm very angry, you know. I lived all...
You don't look very angry.
No, because I get to draw it out.
Okay.
I get to draw it out, and I'm lucky because of that. Because I found a way to vent. And because the way our community is built in the Arab and Muslim world, or even in the global south as a whole, you don't have time to figure out how you can vent out this anger, or how you can, you know, figure out what to do with it. Because you have a family to feed.
Yeah, and you have responsibility.
You have responsibility, and the government doesn't allow you to have the time to do that, or it doesn't support you to do that. So, you know, I was very lucky to have a family that at least tried to give me that space to do what I wanted to do. And it wasn't easy, because, you know, I had a job, and I have kids, and I still tried to do that. And I wasn't doing it for money.
When did you realize that you were an artist, that you were actually a cartoonist? Mm. Did you know what a cartoonist was?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to read these political cartoon magazines, which I really loved, and because I loved comics to begin with. So the story started with comics. I loved comics. I loved superheroes and Superman. And we used to read them in Arabic, and then I started reading my father's magazines, which were like the political cartoon magazines. And that kind of combined two of the things that I really love, which are comics and asking questions and trying to know why. And what I realized was, you know, after reading these magazines for a while, was that they're censored. There's a lot of things that they can't say, but they make it obvious with the cartoons that they can't say it, you know. So
in what way?
Like, a cartoon would be about Mubarak praising him, or praising a minister or something, but it's ironic, right? Because it's not really. So it's kind of like getting messages through, and I loved it. You know, I mean, I was like, how? Because it's a thin line, you know, you can get in a lot of trouble for that. So I really admired their work. And I remember when I was 16, I went to visit my brother. My brother studied in Egypt. And he used to know, or he still knows actually, the daughter of one of my favorite cartoonists, who's Sudanese, but he lived in Egypt his whole life. His name is Mohammed Hakim. And I remember my brother talking about, you know, to my father about, yeah, you know, there's this girl, and her father is he's an artist, he's a cartoonist for Sabah Al Khair magazine. And I was like, which one? You know, and he said, Mohammed Hakim. I was like, Mohammed Hakim, he's Sudanese. He's like, yeah, he's Sudanese. And I, you know, talking to you right now, I just got that memory. You know, I never actually thought about that before. So we went to his house, and I remember talking to him, and my brother.
It must have been huge.
Yeah, it was huge for me, you know. And he's a really old man. He was a really, really old man. And just, you know, he
was still drawing.
He was still drawing. And I remember we were in his salon, and I begged my brother to take me to their house. And I was there, and he was, you know, with his friend, and I was talking to her father.
And
both of them were like, what
age?
The fuck is wrong with this guy? Like, I was 16.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 16, 17. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was the first cartoonist I ever met. And I don't remember actually what happened, but I remember I was very happy. And just seeing him. And
did it put you on the road to what you are doing today?
I think he kind of did, but in a way that it came back to me after a lot of years. You know, this is literally the first time I speak about this. You know, I never actually thought about this before at all. And then from there, it was just, you know, just getting to know other cartoonists, like Najil Ali, or, you know, the Palestinian cartoonist. And just his story in itself was amazing for me, you know. The fact that even though he was a Palestinian, but he still criticized the Palestinians. You know, he didn't only just blame the Israelis. He criticized the Palestinians as well. He criticized the Arabs on their weaknesses, on their morals, you know. He still criticized the Israelis, of course, for you know, a lot of things. But he criticized both sides, and I loved that about him.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that...
So you took that to heart?
Yeah. Literally, he died because of it. You know, he got assassinated. And nobody knew who killed him. Was it the Mossad or was it the Palestinians? You know? So, for me, that's a cartoonist. Mm. That's somebody, that's independence. You know? And I respect that.
But it's a bit funny that the most famous of all your cartoons, it's not really a cartoon. It's with your hand.
Yeah.
How do you describe that?
Well, it's for me, I mean, you know, cartoons are...
It's a painted hand where yeah. each finger has the color of an Arab flag.
Yeah. It was I think the same day of the protest, and I work in a museum, and I was in the studio, and we're watching the Al Jazeera and the protests in Tunis, and so I thought it's gonna happen, you know, this is not gonna stay in Tunis, and I just took a picture of my hand giving the finger, and I colored it, and it was basically the middle finger was the Tunisian flag, and then around it was...
Oh, so you colored the photo, because I was going to ask you, how could you actually paint this on your hand?
No, I colored the photo. It was digital. And then I did the Libya, Egypt, and then Algeria and Sudan.
And so you get the impression from the photo that these are the ones to come?
Yes, and it's called The Rest Will Follow. So it's one finger up, and then the rest will follow. And it did happen. Protests happened in all of them. And the same day, that cartoon just went crazy. And it was on Wikipedia, and you know. And then when like they put up the Arab Spring page, I think it was then when it was dubbed the Arab Spring, they put up that picture as well. But it just went everywhere. And that was my first experience having an international work goes out like that. Because before that, I was doing a lot of work about Sudan, and I was not famous, but you know, people knew my work, or young people knew my work. And from there, it just went crazy. Like, I started doing, I started doing a cartoon a day from that day, you know? And, if you ask me in 2010 if I'll ever be here, or that if...
In Denmark?
In Denmark, or just still doing cartoon. I would laugh. It would be no way that I will still be doing cartoons, but I never thought that I would actually have that effect, you know, because things really got out of hand. Seriously, got out of hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, later on came all sort of everything, you know, the people that agree with you, and the people that don't agree with you, and the dangerous people that don't agree with you. And then, you know, the governments, and, you know, I felt like I was over my head. I still feel like I'm over my head.
Mm.
Yeah.
But the actually geographic place where you are, it doesn't matter so much, does it? Because when you work on the... You were sitting on the cafe when I met you.
Yeah.
10 minutes, 20 minutes ago, and you were sending a cartoon.
Yeah.
So you can actually do it from...
Anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it depends. But if I do this and I'm in a different country, then it's different laws.
Yeah.
Or no laws, yeah. Actually. That's a problem. The issue is that there are no laws. It's uncertainty. You know, like nobody knows what's gonna happen, and this is what I used to go through. Like, just every time I write something or every time I draw something, I have to look over my shoulder. I have to think about what's gonna happen to my kids? What's gonna happen to me? Is this okay? Is this not? My mom comes barging in. She's like, "What did you do?" And you know, take it down or whatever, you know. And I didn't have actual editors, but I had editors at home, you know, like people who were like worried about things happening.
But you are your own editor.
I am my own editor. Yes, and there's definitely a lot of works that I don't put up, even here. Because still, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Do you save them for later?
Hopefully. I hope one day that we have the power and the courage to put out these works without thinking about what's going to happen. I hope so, and I'm saving it for that day.
Thank you for joining on the on this podcast. And I'm looking very forward to have you on the festival Images of Life, which is on the 16th in Österbro.
Yeah.
You'll be the closing act for that day.
Oh, thank you.
See you then.
Thank you very much. I'll see you guys then.